Hey, Deal Farm podcast listeners, before we jump into this episode, I want to remind everybody about the purpose of this podcast. I want you to listen to this podcast and figure out how and where you can get into real estate investing yourself. So if you've got a deal that you need funding for, let me know about it. If you want to buy a property in your backyard or in another market and flip it, let me know about it. If you want to buy a cash flowing property and you need to figure out where you're going to buy it, let me know about it. If you've got money that you just want to put to work right now as a private lender, let me know about it. This is what I'm here to do. I'm here to help you invest. All you need to do is go onto our website, dealfarm.net, and fill out the form. It comes directly to my inbox, and I will respond to you directly and do whatever I can to help you become a successful real estate investor.
You're listening to the Deal Farm Podcast with Ken Corsini, educating, inspiring, and connecting you to real estate deals. And now, your host, Ken Corsini.
Hey, this is Ken Corsini with The Deal Farm. On today's Best Deal Ever episode, I've got Gene Guarino. Gene, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Ken. How are you today?
Very good. Thanks for being on the show. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
So Gene actually is going to talk to us about something that to me is super intriguing, and that's using residential properties as assisted living facilities. And he's actually the president of the Residential Assisted Living Academy. But I'm sure, Gene, that before you became president of the Residential Assisted Living Academy, you were probably, like most of us, just a residential real estate investor. So how did take us to the very beginning. Where did your story begin, and how did you end up in this position?
Well, I was born and no. So actually, my first property was age of 18, which is pretty darn young. I was a professional musician, and we had a music school and a recording studio. So we had a landlord who was horrible. And I said, we're either shutting this down or we've got to get a new place, and looked up the street, for sale sign in the lawn. And it was many years ago, 1979. So literally pulled the sign out of the front yard and walked home with it. This is before cell phones, so you couldn't just call. And literally took their sign, called them. It was a real estate agent who was an investor, bought the property, no money down, because I had no money, no credit, and had no experience. So that's where it all began. And here I am 30 plus years later and just focusing on one thing, the assisted living. In a residential setting. And the reason why I'm doing that, Ken, is because my mom, who was in her 80s, was having some problems where, you know, a lot of people who get older need to have some help. And I was very fortunate with six brothers and sisters that they lived nearby. They could be there to take care of mom to some extent. But then the needs got more higher. And now we have to bring in somebody at $20, $25 an hour, and that gets expensive. So then you get to the point where it's like, okay, she's not ready for a nursing home. The Golden Girls was a TV show, but that's not reality. So what do you do? So we started to look for the options we had, and I'm 54. So when you're 54 years old, your mom is now, you know, 84 years old. You're in that part of life, and you start to look around and realize, wow, it's going to cost $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, $8,000, $10,000 a month to have mom in one of these homes. And you just start thinking about it business-wise. It's like, I'd rather be collecting checks from 10 people than paying, you know, for my mom there. So long story short, we couldn't find what we were looking for my mother. So we did keep her at home, but I live in Phoenix, Arizona. And I said, well, I'm going to come up with a solution for not just, you know, my family, but other people's family. And so residents now live in these homes, and it's a wonderful place they can be, as opposed to a big, huge, big box facility where there is 200 people in the building, where it's 100 yards to get the breakfast, and nobody's really there to take care of you. You're just living amongst other people. Most people who are 80 years old, they don't want to go live in a hotel. They want to be in a home. Mm-hmm. So we create that environment, a residential setting, and it's been wonderful.
Interesting. So for you to have the confidence to step out and say, let's figure out how to put this together, I'm assuming you were a residential investor yourself. Had you owned properties previously to this?
Yeah, absolutely. I've done the single family, the multifamily, the light commercial, all of the different aspects. And, you know, I liked aspects of all of them. So I was definitely in the real estate game. But in Arizona, when the market was careening down, it was just such a wonderful time to be buying. So I was on the right side of that. And then when the hedge funds came in with their billions of dollars, sold it off to them. And then I moved into the assisted living because – the real estate was right. The market was right. The demographics are right. There's a tsunami of seniors coming our way, and it was just a huge opportunity. So yeah, I segued from what I'll call the regular real estate investing of buy and hold or fix and flip, and moved right into this as real estate and business combined.
And so how many years ago did you sort of make that transition?
Yeah, I actually heard about this over 10 years ago, but it wasn't until 3 years ago that I sold off the single family home portfolio in Arizona and then moved into this. And I started by buying an existing one, which, you know, there really was, I have an academy where I teach people how to do this now, but there wasn't anything like that for me to go to. I wish there was. So I went through the school of hard knocks and figured it all out and how to do it, what to do, what not to do. And it's different in every state, but yet it's pretty much similar. So bought an existing business and the real estate and the business combined, took it over, cut my teeth with that, learned what to do and how to improve it, how to raise the rents and so on, then moved on to the next and the next.
So interesting. So that, yes, you didn't necessarily have to go out there and figure it out as much as you bought into one and sort of probably learned the ropes just by virtue of the fact that all of a sudden you're in it, you own it, you've inherited this property with people. Did you step in then immediately as like the manager operator of that facility?
No. Okay. And you know, keep in mind that, you know, what I'm describing that I did, I realize that I'm not the usual guy. I mean, not many people are going to stroke a check for $500,000 and just buy somebody else's business so they can learn it.
Right.
You know, so it's because that's in essence what it was $500,000 to buy the real estate and the business combined. And it's like, okay, let me figure this thing out from the inside. Now, I mean, that's what I love about when I train other people is I can take them through that entire process so they can go through self-discovery to say, is it right for me? What part do I want to play? And so on. But yeah, I didn't step in as the manager. I'm not a manager or a caregiver. I'm the business owner. And one of the things that I found in this whole thing, Ken, is that most of the people that are involved as operators are owner operators that are mom and pop. You know, they live in the house, they have guests, residents in the house, they cook some extra food, do some extra laundry, and they're trapped in their own house. That's not the model that I teach people to do. It's not what I did, not what I want anybody else to do. What I do is I teach you how to find the manager, how they find the caregivers, how we attract the residents, and they stay in the home, but you're operating a business that is real estate related and business related.
So just high level, I mean, just so people can wrap their head around this, I mean, essentially what you're doing is you're taking just a regular old single family home, maybe even just in a neighborhood, and you're, instead of renting it to a single family, you're actually now setting it up where you can keep elderly people in there as an assisted living facility with nurses and people that are on staff, like a basically a running assisted living facility in the, just a single family home.
Yeah, that's close, but let me refine that a little bit. So, yeah, the location is really the key. You want this to be in a neighborhood where it is upper middle class because the client is really not the resident lying in the bed or in the home. It's the family. So I was more of the client than my mother is. My mother's living in the home, but the kids are the ones paying for it. Mm-hmm. So the home should be located where it's convenient for those kids, 50, 60 years old, to go to. So whether it's in their neighborhood, which is perfect, or close to where they work or on the path to it, what you don't want to do is, and this is a big mistake that a lot of people do, is they say, I've got the perfect house for an assisted living facility. And I pull it up on Google Maps and it's an hour away from humanity. And it's like, nobody's going to go visit grandma, you know, over the river and through the woods works once a year, not every day or every weekend. So you got to be in a convenient location in more of an upscale area. Then from there, when we say a plain house, I've seen people do this in small homes, 1,500, 1,800, 2,000 square feet, and I've seen it done in large homes of 10,000 square feet. So you really can go soup to nuts, and as you can imagine, the location, the size, the amenities, that's going to affect how much money you make. So you kind of decide, and when I teach it in my training, I go from level one, which is the lowest, to level five, which is the highest, and I like to focus on 3, 4. So you're not on the bottom, and you're not at the cream of the crop at the very top. What you want is kind of that sweet spot, level 3, level 4, where a lot of people can afford it, but it's not for everybody. Mm-hmm. And it's also not the home, because there's homes out there that people charge $25,000 a month per person to stay in, and there's 10 residents in the home. But you don't have that many clients who can afford that. But when you're talking a national average of $3,500 per person for a private room, if you're in the $4,000-$5,000 range or $5,000-$6,000 range per person with 10 people in the home, that's a nice gross income to work from.
I mean, before you and I ever spoke, I had no idea that that's how much it costs for an assisted living facility. Mm. $3,500 national average. That's per person, per bedroom.
Per month.
Per month. When that house, if that exact same house, maybe it's a 3 or 4 bedroom house, was just rented to a family, you're talking, you know, maybe $1,000 to $1,500 a month in rent for the entire house. And now you're talking $3,500 per bedroom.
Yeah, actually, it really could be that. But to be fair, let's say it's $2,000 a month or $2,500 a month to rent that house. Still, it's a nice, because I want you to do it in a nicer house. Yep. So, and from a real estate perspective, we haven't talked about this even when we talked beforehand, is if you own real estate and let's say it's a really nice house, but it's $500,000, but you can only rent it for $3,000 a month. You can't make that cash flow. But if you were to own that same home, lease it to somebody that is going to operate this business, you could lease it to them for twice the fair market rent. Instead of $3,000, get $6,000 a month. Now your real estate investment makes a lot of sense. Why would somebody be willing to rent it for twice of what it's worth? Because they're going to operate the business and make $10,000 or $15,000 a month. Hmm. So it's a win-win situation.
Interesting. So, and again, there's a distinction there between, and this must be what you teach your students, of just renting the house to an operator or being the operator yourself.
Yes,
absolutely. Teach both sides of that?
Yeah, I do. Because in the class itself, what's really neat is there's probably a third of the people that want to be just own the real estate. It's like, look, this is great. I want to be a part of the senior housing market. I just don't want to be in the business. Don't want to have anything to do with it. I just want to lease the house. Great. And then there's others that say, I want to own the real estate and operate the business. Great. And then there's a third of the class that are just like, I want to do this, but I don't want to be involved at all. I just want to stroke a check. You know, yeah. This is the easiest thing I've ever raised capital for. Being able to raise money is a real key to your career in real estate and business itself. So being able to raise capital, no matter what you do, is really important. But if anybody out there is listening has ever tried to raise money before and you talk to somebody about, yeah, I've got a single family home or an apartment building or a fix and flip, it's kind of the same old that everybody's heard. But when you go in and you start saying senior housing, baby boomers, $3,500 on average, you know, $10,000 a month net profit, it perks up their ears and they're like, how can I get in this game? So there's a third of that class that just want to stroke a check and invest, and then they all mix together. So some people partner together. Some people say, well, I'll be the lender and I'll be the real estate owner and I'll be the operator. So that's a neat thing too.
Well, and to the point of capital, folks that are putting up money basically are helping you acquire the property and get it in probably set up as a assisted living facility. But then do most of your folks eventually get some sort of permanent financing, I'm assuming, on the property, or does the capital partner stay involved?
Yeah, and we do a long section on this, so I'll give you kind of a nutshell. If it's just a residential home, which is where all these start, you can just go to the bank and get regular financing, non-owner occupied, long-term, low rates. That's your best financing. But if it's already been converted, and that conversion itself inside isn't really different than a single-family home, other than instead of bathtubs, you might have roll-in showers. You're going to have grab bars in all the bathrooms and toilets. You may have wider doors, not, you know, shopping mall wide. I mean, 36-inch Home Depot wide doors. So you have wider doors, you have grab bars, you maybe took out some of the bathtubs. So that's what it looks like inside. But, you know, the real estate part, if I go to a bank and it's already been converted, there's a license on the wall, there's 10 seniors living in the home, the appraiser looks at that and goes, you're running a business out of here. Well, yeah. And it's licensed and there's no problem. Yeah, but it's a residential home, but it's now being used for a business, so I don't even know how to appraise it. So then the bank just said, you're outside of our box. Hmm. So then you go to the commercial lender, and the commercial lender says, well, it is a business, but it's inside a residential home, and so you're outside of our box. So I tend to work with private lenders. They're easier to work with anyway, and there's so many millions and billions of dollars sitting on the sideline earning nothing right now. It's so easy to raise the capital, but private lenders a lot easier. So those investors who are saying, yeah, I'm willing to put up the money, they're kind of stepping in where the banks are stepping out. And then you mentioned the idea of the long-term financing. So let's say you're in the business and you've got 2 years of track record, and you've got 2 years of tax filings. So now you can go back to the bank and legitimately get a loan because, yes, it's residential. Yes, it's a business. But here's the track record. I've been operating it for 2 years and so on. So getting the financing then is a lot easier. Yes, you can get SBA financing, by the way, and I know some of you are thinking that. And with the SBA, they have their own hoops to jump through. So it's still the same kind of qualifications, but they'll lend up to 90% on the real estate, up to 75% on the business. So if you're purchasing the real estate and the business, you can get those rates. So there's lots of ways to make it happen. I love being creative with the financing.
Interesting. My other question, it's one of the first things that comes to my mind is, how do you not run into issues with HOAs and with zoning compliance and things like that?
Got it. Well, number one, because of the Fair Housing Act, which is federal, you can do this in any state, any city, any house, anywhere, even if there's a homeowners association. Having said that, if there is a homeowners association, they can make your life miserable or difficult at best. So I always try to stay away from that, number one. But now let's go to the city level. I'm in Arizona, so there's a city here called Tempe, and Tempe is a big university town. So there's a rule in Tempe that you can't have more than four unrelated adults because they don't want the Animal House fraternity down the street.
Right, I remember that. Right?
Yeah, but in this case, you know, they're not going to kick grandma out. So you can have up to 10 people in a home, even in Tempe. So the state of Arizona has a limit of 10 people in a home. The state of Texas has a limit of 16 people in a home. The state of Oregon has a limit of 7 people in a home. Some states have no limit. So it just depends. It's state by state, city by city. But I'm always going to go with the path of least resistance. If the homeowners association doesn't want it, can I fight it and battle it? Absolutely. Will I win? Eventually. Do I need to go through the battle? Nope, because there's a neighborhood right next door that doesn't have an HOA.
Yeah, I gotcha. Well, and I guess it's not like you have a ton of cars parked in the front yard because most of your residents aren't driving, are they? What's normal?
Yeah, none of the residents are driving, but you will have a number of cars because you have caregivers, you have visitors. We love to have family come visit. So at any given time, you might have two cars or you might have, you know, five or six cars, but it's no more than a regular family. What you also have is, you know, when you – I'm thinking about my homes right now. When you look at the home, it's as good, if not the best home on the block from a curb appeal standpoint, because I want it to look good, feel good. It's all about the curb appeal when you're coming in. And you're not going to have late night parties and kids running around or somebody dissecting a motorcycle in the family room. You know, the residents are in bed by 7:15. You know, they're kind of quiet.
They ate dinner at 4:15.
That's right.
And they're in bed by 7:15. That's it's so interesting that there's not like a zoning requirement to me, because like you think of daycare and the other types of facilities that require special zoning, but I guess you're able to get around that with this.
Well, it's not that it doesn't require it, but the idea of can it be done is yes. So again, I'll be very specific. In Phoenix, Arizona, for instance, just until last month, they limited you to you can't have a home in a residential area for a 10-bed facility if there's another one that's within a quarter mile. So literally the first thing I would do is you on speed dial, just call up zoning. Hey, here's the address. Can I do a home here? And they would pull it up on their map, draw a circle a quarter mile around, 1,320 feet. And if there's no other 10-bed homes, the answer is yes, you can. So now the zoning itself, it has to change from R3 to R4. Not a big deal. It's paperwork. But it's not like I have to get approval from the neighbors or anything like that. It's literally filling in the paperwork. We're going to do an assisted living care home here. You can do it as a regular home, but it's going to be – that's what we're doing. So once we have that in place, now we go ahead and do any renovation if we need to the home. You get the fire inspection, and you go ahead and now you apply to the state for the license that's required. So that process itself can take a couple of months to go through. If you don't know what you're doing, it could take you a year to go through it. So – one of the easy ways to get into this is buying an existing one because somebody's already gone through everything that I just described. Now it's just change of ownership from one to another. So you can do it a number of different ways. You can walk into somebody else's deal. You can create your own. And there's pros and minuses with each one.
Mm-hmm. So let's say, you know, somebody's out there. One of my investors is listening to this and they're like, oh man, I've got the perfect house.
Mm-hmm.
obviously, you're laughing because you're probably like, it's not the perfect house. But,
well, it could be the perfect house. It's just in the wrong area. They're like Kevin Costner. It's like Field of Dreams. If I build it, they will come.
Right.
You know.
Right.
So
as
it's,
long as it's not in the middle of a cornfield in Iowa, I guess they you got a better chance. But they're going to have to renovate it, and they're going to have to get some licensing. What are some like the first steps like in thinking through? Okay, this house has a potential. What do I do next?
Yeah, the first thing is always zoning. So you touched on this right off the bat. Okay. That was smart. The first thing is zoning. Can I do it here? What are the obstacles there? And again, I love it when I go into a state or a city where they have rules already drawn out. You'd be amazed how many times I go someplace with a student and the city's like, we don't have rules for that, which, you know, if it's not denied, it's implied. That's a legal term that if it doesn't say you can't do it, that means you can't. So if the town doesn't have rules for this, well, you can do it then. But if they do have rules, I love it because they're like, you do this, you do this, you do this. So zoning is first. Can I do it? Next thing is, what do I have to do? So most states, what they have is a limit. Like in Arizona, you can have up to 4 people in a home with no license at all. So you can just do 4 people in a home, no license at all. You can just do it. You don't have to have a licensed business and so on. But if you have 5 people, now you have to have a license. But if you have 6 people, 6 to 10, now you have to have a sprinkler system, fire suppression. Mm-hmm. So that's the next thing. What is the requirement? So fire suppression, sprinkler system. I know that if it's an existing home and we have to go into the ceilings and the walls to cut it in and do it, it's going to cost $3 to $4 per square foot of floor space in order to do the sprinkler system. So I'm already starting to, just like I do in a fix and flip, you walk through the house with a pad and say, okay, new bathroom, $3,000, new kitchen, $7,000, new carpet, X. So same thing here. It's like, okay, I've got X square feet of house. It's going to cost me this for the sprinklers. I want to widen 6 of the 8 doors here, so it's going to cost me X for that. Want to put in smoke detectors, want to take out the carpet, put in tile, want to do this, do this, do this. So the next thing is the physical renovations, right? What do you need to do versus what do you want to do? Mm-hmm. So that's a whole big – that's a training in itself, right? We call that architectural review. But the need to do versus want to do, that's the next part. And then the next step is you just lay it out. So what are the financing? What do I need to make this happen, to purchase the property, to renovate the property, to get the business up and running? And then everything else just kind of falls in line. We've done it enough and taught other people to do it, so it's kind of a system on what you do.
Interesting. So the in terms of, you know, having a license, you know, based on 4 people versus 5 people, putting sprinkler systems in, is that state to state or is that local municipality?
Pretty much state to state, but then some of the cities do have little nuances. And by the way, the first time you're hearing that, it sounds, oh my goodness, this has got to be complicated. And my first thought, I want to address that first before we go into more localities, but, you know, is that if it was easy, everybody would do it, right? Anybody can buy a house, fix and flip and so on. And the average single family home fix and flipper in the United States, I think the number was $9,600 in profit is the average. So that means there's some people making twice that, some people losing money. If you're in California, you might make $200,000 on a fix and flip. But if you're someplace else, the average nationwide, $9,600. Okay, anybody can do that. Even if you've never done it before, you can watch a TV show and get on the internet and do it. Assisted living. All right, we're dealing with people. Residential, licensing, hoops. Yeah, so once you jump through the hoops and now you're making $10,000 a month for the rest of your life, I don't know. I'm willing to jump through the hoops. When I was 20 years old, making $10,000 was exciting. Mm-hmm. At 54, that's a vacation with the family. That's not much. But if you do something once and you get paid $10,000, $15,000 a month for the rest of your life, that's exciting to me. Significant residual income.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. You touch on another interesting point. Let's talk about the numbers. What do you typically see? I mean, obviously people are out there listening thinking, okay, wow, you said $10,000 to $15,000 a month in profit. How does that work? Can you maybe just give us sort of a rough breakdown of how that typically boils out?
Yeah, and I'll keep it rough and I'll do averages because you'll see in a minute. So the average private room, private individual is $3,500. So you're going to have some shared rooms in a house. You're going to have a master bedroom. Some are going to be lower. Some are going to be higher. But let's just use the national average, $3,500. Let's use the number 10 because in Arizona, I'm limited to 10. In Texas, it's 16. California, it's actually unlimited. Most people think it's limited to 6, but it's not. Hmm. So Let's use 10. So your potential gross income is 35 times 10, $35,000. So you're going to have some vacancy. You're not always going to be full and all that. But your biggest expense is going to be caregivers. So caregivers, the people taking care of the residents day to day, that's your biggest expense. Manager, because I don't want you, Ken, to be managing it. I'm not going to. So I have a manager that oversees the caregivers. So the labor cost itself is your biggest component. Then after that, you go through the regular expenses. What does it cost anyone to live? Food, utilities, magazines, internet. So you add that all up. And let's say, and I'm going to be conservative here, let's say your expenses, your house is full because you don't have all the expenses if the house isn't full. It's less food, it's less caregivers, and so on. So if the house is full and you got 35 coming in on the top line, and let's just say I have $20,000 in expenses, which is high, but $20,000 in expenses for everything else from food to labor to everything, there's only one more expense. That's the real estate. So if you own the real estate, that could be debt service if you have a loan. If it's a home you already own free and clear, there is no debt service. So the debt service, let's say you had $5,000 available for debt service, you know, so your mortgage payment is five grand. I think you can buy or rent a pretty nice home for five grand a month. Mm-hmm. So 35,000 top line minus 20 minus five leaves you with 10. So there's the 10,000. That's kind of an average. So if you're in a nicer area, which again, I don't want you in the middle of the pyramid. I want you to move up a little bit, a little nicer home, nicer area, and so on. And instead of getting 3,500, you're getting 4,500 or 5,000 or 6 or 8,000. But if you're at $5,000 times 10, that $50,000 top line just increased dramatically and your expenses really didn't. Maybe your expenses increased a couple thousand dollars because you bought a nicer house. But what's the mortgage payment on 500 grand at, you know, 5 or 6%, 3,000, yeah, something like that?
Sure. Yeah.
So if I'm bringing in 15 more on the top line and it's only costing me 3,000 more on the, you know, expense side, that's 12 grand moving right to my bottom line. So that's the 10,000 is kind of an average number, and certainly you can go higher than that. If you want, you can go lower.
Man.
I don't want.
I mean, I'm sure people are like, this sounds too good to be true.
Well, like I said, it's you got to put in the effort. You got to. Here's the thing: if somebody just thinks they're just going to buy a house and move old people in and walk away, not going to happen. Okay.
Right.
If you do this right, you go in with your eyes open and you understand it's where you do it, it's how you do it, it's a people business. It's definitely worth doing. And let's talk big picture for a minute, because some people, you know, I'm as I said, 54. When I was 24, I thought a lot differently than I do at 54. I've got four kids that are grown. One is a senior in high school. I've got a grandchild and I love it, but I'm not interested in having 200 single family homes and, you know, which is basically 400 toilets and 58 dogs and 38,000 kids. I don't want the tenant toilet turnover thing. I don't need the kingdom. What you want is significant residual income so you can live comfortably. And you can do that with one home here with the assisted living. Two homes, you're done. So just picture-wise, everybody has to live somewhere. But when you get older, you need help. So this is mixing the I need to live somewhere with that person needs some help, some assistance with their living. So activities of daily living, ADLs, as they call it in the industry. So how big is that market? Well, we've all heard about the baby boomers, and the baby boomers are 77 million people that are moving through their life. The front edge of the baby boomers, the oldest, are now turning 65, 67, 68. They don't need the senior care yet, but by the time they're 85, 70% of them are going to need help with their activities of daily living for an average of 3.5 years. Those are the stats. So this is a good business now. And it's just getting better and better and better. And once that gravy train of the baby boomers hits, it lasts for 18 years. There's 10,000 people a day right now turning 65. Happy birthday to 10,000 65-year-olds today. 4,000 people turned 85 today. That number, the number of – and that's your key demographic really for this. Yeah, that 85-year-old, because not the 65-year-old, that's the future. The 85-year-old, there's your client. He's 85. It's usually a woman. 7 out of 10 of the residents in a home are probably women. Guys, sorry, we die off early.
That's right.
Right? Yeah, so there's more women than men. So it's an 85-year-old woman. She could be 80. She could be 90, but she could be 70. But 85 years old, she has some medical issues, but it's medication primarily, and she's slowing down. She may fall occasionally. She's forgetful with her medication. She can't live in the big house and take care of it anymore. So there's your prime client, and the kids are scattered around the country. So the aspect of the mega trend, the seniors are here and they're coming in droves, literally. They're lasting longer than ever. When Social Security was created, everybody was supposed to be dead by the time you're going to collect. You know, life expectancy was 63 when they said, okay, when you're 65, we'll give you Social Security. You're supposed to be dead. Now life expectancy is 80. So people are lasting a lot longer, and we don't have kids like we used to. My wife and I came from families with 7 children. We've got 4 children. The average young couple today might have 1, 2. Mm-hmm. So there's not as many kids, new inventory coming on this side. The seniors are living longer, lasting longer. Somebody's got to pay for them, and the kid's not going to quit his job to take care of mom. They need a caregiver. Mm-hmm. $25 an hour, 20 hours a day. There's $5,000 right there each month. Somebody's got to pay for it. Now, here's the other thing. You said this, Ken. You're a young guy, but the reality is you're not thinking about what you're going to be doing when you're 85. But I guarantee as you get closer, you're going to start to think, who's going to take care of me? Mm-hmm. And at that point, you've got a choice. You either leave that problem with the kids, which is what most people do, or you buy long-term care insurance, which only 10% of the population has, or you do what I'm doing, which is create this business, the residential assisted living. Do this business, make great money while you're alive, and when it's time for you to check in, move right into the master bedroom, and it's free.
That's an interesting thought. That's a real long-term strategy, but
we're all going to be there someday.
Do most of your folks pay through some sort of Medicaid supplement or long-term care, or is it straight out of the pocket of the kids?
Yeah, what you really want to deal with is private pay. If you do the Medicaid, different states, it's different amounts, but it's as low as $1,000 a month that they'll pay, as high as $2,200 a month that some states will pay.
Gotcha.
But the kids, you know, and here's a problem. A lot of kids, and I say kids, they're 50 years old. They're looking at their parents and saying, we got to take care of the parents, but we don't want to spend all of the inheritance away. So what are we going to do? And they devise a plan. All right, we're going to divvy up all of mom and dad's stuff, give it to the kids, get it out of their name, wait for the 5-year look back period to pass by. And then we're going to go to the state and say, mom doesn't have any money, so you got to pay for it. What they haven't really thought through, though, is what the state pays. They're $1,000 a month, they're $1,500 a month, they're $2,000 a month. There's not really nice homes that accept that little amount of money. So the home that they can afford with the state pay is going to be on the wrong side of town in a place they don't even want to slow down their car, let alone let mom live there. So when I say the average is $3,500, you may not even be comfortable living there. You may need a place that's $5,000 now. So think 30 years from now, that $5,000 is going to be $15,000. Mm-hmm. It ain't cheap, and it's not going to get any cheaper.
Wow. Amazing. Yeah. So now you bring up the good point that there's, you know, 4,000 people every day turning 85. So there is a market, obviously, for this product. But how do you teach your students to find those people? I'm sure there's a marketing strategy.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And just, again, briefly – and in the training, we go through all this stuff in detail, so I don't want to frustrate anybody who's listening. If you want more, you can get more information. But, you know, the marketing itself, in this case, it's really word of mouth. And think about the process. Mom wants to stay at home. She doesn't want to give up the car. She doesn't want to give up the house. She wants to stay at home. But now mom's forgetting to take her medication, or the daughter comes to visit and she hasn't eaten for a day because she couldn't get to the store for groceries. So it's like, oh, man, mom needs help. So what happens? You know, then you start to go through this whole process, and then it comes to the point, well, we need to have mom, you know, be taken care of on a long-term basis. What are we going to do? How are we going to afford it? So this whole process kind of just starts laying itself out, and somebody's got to take care of this. So moving into a home like this is one way to do it. So most people listening have seen big facilities come into town. Whether it be Brookdale or Sunrise, it's the big, huge 100-unit or 200-unit complex. If you haven't seen that, maybe you've seen just senior communities where it's 55 and above, age-restricted. That's called independent living. There's no care there. It's just seniors living there. Then there's homes for independent living where there might be suites or small apartments. There's still no care. That person's living in a hotel-like complex or an apartment-like complex, 100, 200 people, and it might be $2,500 a month for the apartment. There's dining hall, there's a knitting room, there's a movie theater, there's a chapel inside, and they play bingo, and that's great. But if mom needs help, the front desk calls 911, or the front desk says, here's a number you can call to have an in-room or in-house caregiver come to you for $25 an hour. So once mom needs more help, now she moves into the assisted living. So I went through that whole gyration to get to the point. The way to get the leads is all kinds of ways, but it's referrals. It's word of mouth. If you have senior independent living communities in your area, go to them and say, hey, I've got an assisted living facility around the corner. Want you to come see it. If you have anybody who needs it or has questions, let them come to me. Somebody now, grandma, she or mom, she's in her home. She slips and falls. She bruises her rib. She goes 911 to the hospital. She's now in the hospital. They took x-rays. It's not broken, but it's bruised. You got to lay low. You got to get somebody to take care of you. Now in the doctor's office or the hospital, there's a person called the care coordinator. So that's the person you meet with before they send mom home. So they sit with the kids and say, okay, mom needs help. Who's going to take care of her? And all the kids look at themselves, the doctor, the dentist, the guy working over at the whatever, and they're all saying, I can't quit my job, so what are we going to do? So they say, well, here's your choices. You either get in-home care, you go to this big box facility up the street with 200 people in it and one caregiver for every 12 or 15 residents, or Ken has this nice home down the street and this really big house. There's only 10 people living there. They have two caregivers all day long, and the ratio of caregivers to resident is much better, and it's actually less expensive than to live in the big place. But, you know, if you'd rather have the big hall with the bingo and so on, live up on top of the hill. But if you'd rather be in a more of a personal situation, a little less expensive, potentially, doesn't have to be, down here. So that care coordinator refers them right to you. And then there's actually a whole group of people that are just referral agents. They refer people, seniors, into these homes, and they get paid a fee. So I gave you a long answer to a short question. Sorry about that.
Well, no, that's interesting because, you know, most of us single family guys, we think of marketing a lot of times as sending out postcards or putting up bandit signs. But it's interesting. You really dive into this community and figure out who are the people that can refer you business, which, I mean, it makes complete sense because it's something a little more specialized.
Yeah, definitely. It's not like put an ad on Craigslist and people are looking there. And realistically, I was on the phone with somebody just the other day, and they were saying, look, we placed mom in this other home because just what I went through. You know, she had a fall. She's in the doctors. They're ready to release her. We needed to make a decision. They gave us this name. We moved into this home. So that's how they picked it. They needed to find a place today. And that's usually the way it is. It's a pretty quick. It's who's available and who recommended who to who.
Interesting. The whole thing is interesting. I mean, I'm completely intrigued. I mean, it's not often my wheels are spinning this fast, but I really, you know, I'm even thinking in terms of here locally, new construction. To me, rather than trying to take a house and fit into something maybe that doesn't quite fit the right box, is just build something that fits.
Sure. Well, if you do it that way, then, you know, think about the ease of that. You design it exactly the way you want it. You can have a half bath in every single room. If you design it up front, life is easy. If you retrofit a home and try to add in that many bathrooms, that's expensive, difficult.
Yeah. You could probably actually do new construction for a lot less than taking a house and retrofitting it, or comparable, and at least it's brand new.
Depends on your market, but yeah, I've got a partner in Colorado, and what he does is he'll take just a regular, you know, 3-2, 1,800 square foot house on two levels, and, you know, seniors can't go up the stairs that well, so that means either a chair lift or an elevator. So he'll take the single level and he'll expand it, put on a huge 1,000, 2,000 square foot addition on it, and use the upstairs for caregivers or offices or something else. But that way he's in the right neighborhood, and now he just puts the addition on the back of it. You can convert garage space. You can convert patios and porches. Do it all legally. Do it properly. Don't mess around. But yeah, you absolutely. It's all about the location. If you're in the right location, building it is a fine option.
Interesting. Okay, so tell us. You know, you've been at this for a while. It sounds like you've done a lot of deals. You probably partner with a bunch of students as well. What is there one deal for you that stands out? It doesn't necessarily have to be assisted living. Maybe it was in your prior, you know, investing world that stands out as your best deal ever?
Gotcha. Well, I'm going to go to one here with an assisted living one. So I was asking, one of the things you look for is you're looking for existing ones that somebody wants to sell. You won't find them on the MLS or LoopNet or BizBuySell very often because the owner doesn't want to tell the world that the home's for sale because then the residents and families would be uncomfortable and move out. So how do you find the sellers? So we have secrets for that. I teach that to my students. But I was talking to a referral agent asking her, do you know of any homes for sale? She said, well, yes, I do. It's off the market. And here it is. So I went and talked to them. It was $500,000 for the real estate and the business combined. I negotiated it that way because I knew that the business was worth probably $150,000 to $250,000, depending on how you look at it. And the real estate was worth about $450,000. But if I combined them together for the $500,000, I knew that was a good deal. So that's what I did. So then I went ahead and raised capital, and I actually raised capital of $516,000 to do the deal. So it was more than what the real estate cost and the business combined. So it was 100% plus financing, but it gets better than that. So bought it, in essence, no money down, no money of mine. Other people provided the money. The revenue was $24,000 gross income when we got in. Within a year and a half, we were at $31,000. So the net revenue day one, just walking into it, was about $6,000 a month.
Wow.
So to buy a place with no money down and get $6,000 a month is good. Once the revenue was raised, we also increased the pay and a little better food and those kind of things. The positive cash flow is now at $10,000 a month. So that's good. And the way the deal worked, because there's, if anybody has bought property before that's already been rented out, if you're buying the property and somebody's already paid the rent, you get credited with that. If they're security deposits, you get credited with that. So not only did I do it with no money down, but at the closing, I actually got a check for, well, a wire to the account. They don't do checks anymore. For a little over $40,000. So there's $40,000 in the account, which I didn't go spend in Tahiti. That's for reserves or things you might need. So to be able to buy a business and a house with no money down and 40 grand cash in the bank, and it's spinning off 6 grand day one and 10 grand 18 months later per month, that's a pretty good deal.
Man. Well, you know, interesting. On the flip side of that, I mean, is there a strategy where you've got people that are putting together facilities and then reselling them for a profit, basically building the business, setting it up, and then selling them?
You know, it's really interesting because with my students, I don't typically partner with the students, but I do have ways of certainly helping them with in a real hand-holding way. Not that I haven't partnered with students, but that right there, if somebody did that, I have students who would love to buy what you've got, because the reality is you've jumped through all the hoops. You did all the heavy lifting. You did everything that it takes. So now you're literally handing the keys to this cash cow to somebody else. And if you're willing to do that and get paid a couple hundred grand for that, yeah, you can make a nice fix and flip amount there. And but the person who's going to get it, what they're doing it for is the 10 grand a month.
Yeah.
So you made your 200 once. After right. taxes, you get 100. But they're going to get their 10 grand a month for a lifetime. And so they're more than happy to, if you would like to do that, I will teach you how, and then I will line you up with people who want to buy them.
There you go. Built in business.
Seriously. I mean, seriously, they want them. As a matter of fact, that's one of the things that I teach is how to find them for sale. It's really funny too. And I'm just saying this to you, Ken, because there's people listening, but you know, you can do anything you want to do, but you got to do it. Nobody's going to do it for you. So I can teach people, students, what to do and exactly how it's done. And if they follow my directions, life is good. I've got one student who did exactly what I told her to do. Within 4 months, 5 months, she has 5 homes, 5 care homes.
Wow.
That's awesome. I'm not saying that's typical. It's not typical at all. All I'm saying is she did what I told, what I suggested that she do. I taught her, trained her, held her hand, walked her through 5 homes, 4 months. That's pretty cool. Another guy, a student who did exactly what I said on how to find existing homes for sale. They're not on the MLS, LoopNet, BizBuy, Sell, and so on. He's now got 6 homes where he's got off market. He's not a realtor, by the way. He's identified 6 homes and businesses that are for sale, motivated sellers, and now he's working with students and others who want to buy these homes, and he can get a consulting fee. He can't get a listing fee. He's not selling real estate, can't do that. But he certainly can get a consulting fee for the business, and you could make a nice profit doing just that. Because like I said, there's people that are willing to pay lots of money for that. So there's
lots of different ways to plug into this business, it sounds
yep.
like. Hands-on or hands-off, either way.
Yeah, absolutely.
So a lot of folks are listening thinking, okay, I'm very interested. I want to learn more about potentially becoming a student or coming to one of your seminars. Where would we point them?
Real simple. The business that I have, the academy, is called the Residential Assisted Living Academy. So the website is ralacademy.com. RAL, Residential Assisted Living Academy.com. When you go there, there's a contact page. And on the contact page, there's a spot where it says, how did you hear about me? Just put Ken or whatever it is you want to identify so we know that you came from this. And if you do that, I'll send you a free report so that you can get a little more information on it. And after you've read the report, and there's a webinar on the front page of that website, if you want to call me directly, we'll set up a time where you and I can talk personally, and I'll answer some questions for you. I do have a training that is the way to go. Come out to Arizona. We do a three-day training here where we physically go into my homes and you get to see them from the inside out. Best way to learn, as far as I'm concerned. You touch it, feel it, you smell it, you really learn it. It's not theory, it's the real deal. And we'll go through it. It's intensive 3 days. By the time you're done, you're going to know exactly which part you want to play. You'll have made a lot of great contacts in the room. And you can either say, I'm going to do this part, or this part, and you're on your way. So RALacademy.com.
Gene, this was fantastic. Obviously, a lot of folks are going to be interested. Again, if you're interested in reaching out to Gene, it's RALacademy.com. Let him know that you listen to our podcast. And Gene, thanks again for being on the show. It was fantastic.
Pleasure. Thank you, Ken.
All right. Talk to you soon. Take care. Hey, Deal Farm podcast listeners, this is Ken Corsini with a special offer. If you go to our website right now, dealfarm.net, you have the ability to download our new blueprint. It's called 30 Days to 10K. It's basically the exact blueprint you need to start profiting from wholesaling real estate right now. It's the resources, it's the websites, it's the services that we use. I've even included my exact postcard that I send out. Basically everything you need to start getting deals in the next 30 days. Again, it's at our website, dealfarm.net. Check it out. You can download it for free. Also, we still have our free t-shirt offer. If you want a free Deal Farm podcast t-shirt, just subscribe through iTunes to our podcast and give us a 5-star rating, and then go through our website, contact us, give us your name, address, and t-shirt size, and we will send you a t-shirt in the mail immediately. As always, thanks so much for listening to the Deal Farm. We'll see you on the next episode. Take care.